Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, and I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. On today's episode, Super Tuesday done. Who came out on top? Who came out, period? And who wants to shore up more financing, like from Elon Musk?
Met with the orange man in Palm Beach, Florida.
It's 8 months until Election Day, and there's a lot of politics and probably a lot of negativity to manage until then. How to do it with the host of How to Build a Happy Life, Arthur Brooks.
When people are saying you should be angry, you should be outraged, people will be.
Dartmouth men's basketball voting to unionize. What it means on and off the court with Sports Business Journal's Ben Portnoy.
There's been football players at the high major level that are making multi-million dollar contracts over the course of their 4 years in school.
Plus the war of words between OpenAI and Elon Musk.
Change your name.
It's Tuesday, March 6th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today. Yesterday, the Dow was down by about 400 points. That was actually improvement from where it had been at the lows of the session. It was down by about 1%. The S&P also down by about 1%. And then the NASDAQ was down by 1.6%. The NASDAQ 100 down even more, down by about 1.8%. You had the Magnificent Seven. It may have been Super Tuesday. It was not Magnificent Tuesday. There was a pullback of, I think, $233 billion in market cap for those big Magnificent Seven. The only one that ended higher was NVIDIA. Shares of Apple weighed on the major averages. It was down nearly 3% after a report of struggling iPhone sales in China. Then you had Tesla that was down by even more than that, and some pretty decisive declines in technology.
It's really interesting watching them one by one.
Kind of roll.
We're going to need. Are we going to need the terrific two?
Terrific two, or the rest of the averages, or the rest of the stocks to kind of catch up with what the Magnificent Seven have been doing.
Yeah, catching up. By the way, they want to solve income inequality. They want to bring everybody else down.
Right.
That's not a good way to. I'd wish everyone would join the Magnificent Seven. Apple's been a great stock and a great harbinger of this great tech bull market in the Magnificent Seven, and so is Tesla. And now all our eggs are in NVIDIA at this point. Although I don't think we need to. Anybody who's worried about Microsoft over the past 25 years
has been proven wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not so worried about Zuckerberg. Is so smart, even though he's got a lot to, a lot of pitfalls, a lot of things to deal with. I mean, you can't count him out either. So I think we'll be fine. But with the gains that we've seen, it's not surprising maybe to see
This was a pullback of 1% for the S&P 500
but
and the Dow.
We haven't. It's been a little while. But although the Nasdaq just hit an all-time high.
Right. I think you're talking about declines of less than 2% below the all-time highs for the Dow and the S&P 500.
And it's weird because it says that the average is sold off, but the more speculative parts of the market were rallying, i.e. a Bitcoin, which...
Well, until it pulled back.
Which lived and then rebounded immediately. Yeah. It's up 6% today. So 69, 59, where are we? We'll look at that, 65 today. It's all right here in the paper. That's all you had to do was read the Wall Street Journal to actually get the numbers right. But it went as low as 59,700. So it went 69,000 all the way to 59,700, and then that was a 14% retreat intraday. But who's counting? And then today you're back to 66.
For the week, still up by better than 6%.
And for the month, and 6 months, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year. This, I thought, my little friend Andrew's not here today, but you read this. Did you notice?
Which one?
robust flows into spot funds were a catalyst to the
currencies come back.
You ever seen a call to currency before by anyone with any
not on the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Anyone with any credibility that
not on the front like, page of the Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal just called it said the currency. I mean, don't you think they had to think about that?
Yeah, I guess it must have been a very when we decided.
Think of all the things we have to be careful with now.
Yeah.
In the Post, there's a story. You know that great picture of the veteran kissing the nurse?
Yeah.
They banned that.
Why?
Because it could make someone uncomfortable because it looks like he might have just, in it being so happy, he might have grabbed her and forced himself on her. But then the head of the VA said, this is total crap. It's one of the most iconic. The person in charge really woke, and thought that that was a bad sign to be sent.
Like my grandparents who came home at that point and how excited they were.
So thinking about current, so, you know, if you call Bitcoin a current, that is a big.
I wonder how the turf battle kind of sees that between Gary Gensler, between what happens at the CFTC. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump dominated Super Tuesday's nominating contest, each of them winning hundreds of delegates and moving much closer to clinching their party's nominations. Biden secured more than 1,400 delegates. That is more than 72% of the total that he needs to secure the Democratic nomination. Trump ended the day with more than 900 delegates, or about 78% of the total required to formally become the GOP presumptive nominee. In a speech last night, Trump declared victory without mentioning his opponent, Nikki Haley.
They tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive. This was an amazing night, an amazing day.
Haley scored an upset victory in Vermont, winning 50% of the vote to Trump's 45%, but she lost to Trump in the other 14 states that actually voted yesterday. Haley did not speak overnight about her future. One down-ballot race of note was the Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff and Republican Steve Garvey, winning the top two spots in the race to fill the Senate seat that was vacated by the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. Schiff is now the only Democrat in that race in a state that hasn't elected a Republican senator since the 1960s.
It looks like we're going to the general, ladies and gentlemen.
By the way, I don't know if it was it really. It wasn't a surprise. My son told all day long she's going to win Vermont all day long. So the polls showed that it was that she was either up
or tied.
Got
a big support from the Democratic, from the Republican governor there, right. Sununu, and that was a big deal.
Republican.
Well, Sununu, she is exiting the presidential race. Obviously, the big question is going to be, will she endorse Donald Trump when she bows out?
Exactly. That is a big. It is a big question, big decision. New York Times, this is unbelievable and wow. What would you call it? A hair on fire moment for a lot of people. I don't even know. Would you rather read this? I don't want to be the bearer of bad. They're going to shoot the messenger. They're going to be mad at me. Donald Trump met with Elon Musk. If Elon Musk already had no fans, former fans, he definitely has none left on that side of the aisle at this point. Met with the Orange Man in Palm Beach, Florida, along with some wealthy Republican donors. The report, citing three people briefed on the meeting, said the former president is seeking additional major donors that he might qualify to shore up his finances as he heads toward the general election. It's not clear whether Musk plans to back Trump. Neither Trump or Musk responded to the Times or NBC News when asked for comments on the story. Back in ancient history, I think it was like January 20th, 2020, the first COVID case had arrived in Washington, and I interviewed Trump in Davos. Do you remember what he said about it? It got a lot of
no. What did a he lot say of cover. At that point?
At Elon, he said his.
Oh wait, I think I did.
His
see
very
this because
pithy response to Elon was. He's good with rockets. And he got a lot of grief for saying that he's good. But he's always been a fan of Elon Musk. But
well, no, he called Elon an expletive at one point in the not too distant past. And then they went back and forth. But Elon has had much bigger problems
but he
with
is
the
good
current
with
occupant of the White House.
Right. He is good with rockets. Isn't he? And you know about rockets when you see what Faber said when they take off.
favorite everybody liked, from long ago.
But that was, he was the belle of the ball in Davos. That was January, I think, 21st. And it was before COVID, and everybody was looking at the economy. And I just remember, I remember all these things. Kyrsten Sinema, not going to be around. She was going to have a hard time, I think, in this.
She was in third place.
Yeah, if she had decided to run for re-election. She's going to leave the Senate at the end of this year when her term ends. And here's what she said in a video posted on X.
The only political victories that matter these days are symbolic. Attacking your opponents on cable news or social media. Compromise is a dirty word. We've arrived at that crossroad, and we chose anger and division. I believe in my approach, but it's not what America wants right now.
And West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who also isn't seeking re-election, said yesterday he's worried about the fate of the filibuster after Sinema leaves the Senate. Arizona Democratic candidate Ruben Gallego has said he does not support the filibuster, and they were both the bulwark, the remaining firewall to the Democrats ending the filibuster. We'll see whether that matters.
It depends on where the vote goes, too.
Right, which way it happens.
Very close.
But, like, the middle is, you know, here's two more people in the middle that are going. Larry Hogan is running for Senate. I guess he's got, that's possible, but nobody's left in the middle as we get. Because they can't be.
It's been happening for years.
We used to ask who's in the middle, and we had Manchin and Sinema at least.
Yeah, well,
I used
to think of Evan Bayh and.
Right. Well, nobody has left at this point.
Yeah.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up.
We've gotten into what we call a dark triad paradigm. Sounds like a cool band.
Arthur Brooks, teaching the social science of happiness. He says that our politics today are anything but.
Narcissism, it's all about me. Machiavellianism, I'm willing to hurt you. And psychopathy, which is I have no remorse.
Squawk Pod will be right back.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
Stand by, Joe. Here's Mike. Cue.
Nikki Haley planning to exit the presidential race today. Joining us now to talk about the presidential rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, Arthur Brooks, AEI President Emeritus, Harvard University professor, and The Atlantic contributing writer. I didn't know that we were going to grill you on that. That's what they put. I just read what's in front of me, Arthur. I'll tell you how, since you talk about happiness all the time, let's talk about happiness, because there's a real disconnect right now. And there was a poll a couple of days ago, one of five or six in the last 2 weeks, that have all shown basically the same thing, but kind of surprising. Only 18% of people polled think that Biden's policies have helped them. And the former president, Trump, is like 20 points higher, even among women, for individuals saying I was more helped by Trump's policies than Biden's policies. And we're going to have another Biden surrogate on today, Ro Khanna, a great guy, a friend of mine. He's going to be making the case. It's a tough case, obviously, to make. But why are people so unhappy if things are so good with the labor market, GDP and the stock market.
Well, people are in a very sour mood in the United States today. And part of the reason is because we have this kind of these polarizing figures in politics today, also in media, of course, that are trying to they're talking down the country is what it comes down to. And when people are saying you should be angry, you should be outraged, people will be, notwithstanding anything that's good about public policy.
Now it sounds like what I'm going to hear and what I do hear from Democrats is that people don't know how they're supposed to feel, and they're being told by the media how to look. The media is not going to tell people. Which media is going to tell people to not like Joe Biden? He's got the media. They'll do anything they can to try to help him. So this is happening. This is happening in spite of the media being.
Here's
in
what's been going on for the past 10 years. We've gotten into what we call a dark triad paradigm. Okay, so it's real social science. Sounds like a cool band, but it's actually a social science problem. Yeah, dark triad. It has three personality characteristics.
Heavy metal.
Yeah, I need a t-shirt that says that. What it is a combination of narcissism, it's all about me, Machiavellianism, I'm willing to hurt you, and psychopathy, which is I have no remorse. That constellation of personality characteristics, it occurs in 7% of the population, and they're ordinarily not successful.
Are you saying one of presidential candidates has all three?
No, I'm saying the parties are dominated by activists, and activists tend to be dark triads. And we've gotten into this really bad bullying paradigm where everybody's being bullied and being manipulated, and nobody likes it, but we don't know what to do as a country. The country doesn't know how to get away from the clutches. Now, again, this is not just politics. This is business, which is being manipulated by activists. This is campuses, which are manipulated by activists. And they tend to have this dark triad, the 7%. They have way too much power.
Is social media a cause or just a tool that enables
it? It's an amplification device for this. That's what's actually happening. It's an accelerant to this big problem. But when the 7% are in control, the 93% of the rest of us, which is like, I don't know, but I hate it all. I don't know why.
How has that cycle been broken in the past?
That cycle has been broken in the past two ways. Number one, rebellion, where people say, I hate it, I don't want it, get away from me, stay away from my kids, don't tell me how to vote, stop. Number two is that somebody comes along and says, I have a better way. How about changing the country from fear to love? What do you say about that? That's what Ronald Reagan did.
I was going to tell you called it a rebellion. Other people call it a revolution.
The Reagan Revolution was a rebellion against what had been going on.
Right.
Where,
that was a guy talking about a shining city on a hill that's going to bring everybody in and allow them to flourish.
Yeah, what happens is the very unimaginative median politicians are saying the other guy's evil, be outraged, be sad. I mean, it's ruining mental health from young to old in this country. It's making people feel sad and angry and anxious and lonely and depressed. And when a good leader can come along, when a series of good leaders can come along, when it gets cool to be happy, things start to change. Ronald Reagan did that, and other people have as well.
Arthur, it's 8 more months.
Yeah.
You got Dark Brandon on one side. You've seen his speeches when he you've seen those, right? With the dark behind him. And then you got someone who, on the other side, on any given night, you have no idea what he's going to say. Go ahead and invade a NATO country. I mean,
you don't know. It's
nothing's going to get any. You're screwed. You're not going to be able to do anything for the next 8 months.
Are you kidding?
You're swimming uphill.
Extension, the 4 years to follow.
The 4 years to follow.
No, but it's a great market for what I have to do because people actually care about it. The truth is, we need
like
this.
Cable TV.
Yeah,
with Trump.
But we have to recognize that we're in for the long haul in the United States. We need to be thinking about what's going to happen in 10 and 20 years from now, and that means cultivating leadership. Yeah. I'm as hopeful as I've been in a long time.
Who do you see as potential leaders on either side?
So I see at the local level. And the United States, the great thing about the United States is that local and state politics tend to be upstream from national stuff. Now, it's more true with Republicans. Republicans are more of a grassroots party, and what you see at the local level is what you're going to see later. But I see all kinds of people that want to work for the 70%, the 70% issues that Democrats and Republicans can work on together, that want to lift people up and bring them together, and who recognize that other Americans are not my enemy. This tribal mentality where the biggest threat, in my world, I see the craziest data. 71% of Democrats on dating sites won't date a Republican. Mm-hmm. 41% of Republicans won't date a Democrat.
Right.
You might be wondering about the difference between them. It's because women tend to be more Democratic.
I was going
to
say just
men
that.
Are more Republican, and women are choosier than men on dating sites. But the whole point is, you're going to put that. It's just, it's the worst. Now they're getting into romantic love. They're trying to ruin every part of our lives.
Can't you go to a better restaurant with a Republican? I would think they
have... What? So we have a huge opportunity in this country to actually start to fight back.
You don't think so?
You're playing into the tropes.
No kidding. God, I was going to
look. Listen. The good days are ahead of us if we want them. Is the whole bottom line. And we start to look for the local. We want them. And look, there's a lot of people watching.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Great. So the two people that kept the Senate from going totally nuts.
Yeah.
Are both gone now. Manchin and Sinema. They're both gone. Sinema as of yesterday. So,
yeah.
That, right?
Yeah.
That stopped the mm-hmm. you know, the get out of the filibuster. I mean. All hell could break loose.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You don't need a different person. You need the same people thinking differently and talking differently.
Yeah,
and they're
happen.
Herd animals. This is the point. If they actually start to say, oh, I guess this is what we do. We stop denigrating America. We stop insulting our neighbors. We stop telling people to stop talking to their sister-in-law because she votes Democratic. They'll say, okay, that's what we're doing now. And that's what leadership can actually bring. Now, the way that it actually works for our audience, because a lot of people watching us are going to go run a company after they finish watching us here today. Is to start standing up to the activists on your workforce. Start standing up to the people that are trying to manipulate you and your HR department into saying all these things that are hateful and that are polarizing and they're making people actually unhappy in your workforce. Look, happiness starts at home is the bottom line. And if we start by standing up to the activists, which are the dark triad bullies in this country, ruining our politics, media, companies, campuses, and everything else in between, then we get a better future.
Love it.
Unfortunately, when you describe that person, I'm pointing over here. I'm not pointing at myself. And the people over there, are when pointing. You describe it, they're pointing at me, and they're not pointing
Fair
at
point.
I actually said that on the air, that, my positions are not the problem with this country right now.
Yeah.
And someone said that was arrogant to say that, which it's not.
True. No, most people think that, as a matter of fact. But once you start
once
we have a commitment together to start working together, imagine, look, I mean, you get governors and mayors who say, I live in Massachusetts, and we, from time to time, have really good Republican governors. Yeah. I knew Charlie Baker, terrific governor, best governor in America. What did he say? I can't do all the things that I want to do. Because I'm not in the majority. What I'm going to do is the things that we can actually do together.
You don't live in Cambridge, do you?
What's that?
You don't live in Cambridge, do you?
I don't know. I live in Needham.
Oh, you do?
Beautiful
Needham.
Town.
Yeah.
Beautiful town.
I live in Needham. I live in Newtonville. All right, Arthur. They say we're over. We got to go. I'm a little happier.
Let's make America happy again.
Every week, Arthur.
Next on Squawk Pod, the tea being spilled from OpenAI, sharing old emails with new adversary, Elon Musk. And the landmark vote to unionize sports on campus. Sports Business Journal reporter Ben Portnoy.
This is a monumental moment for college athletics.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site. In Times Square, I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick, and we're late. Andrew's off today. Not that late, are we? Kind of.
It was worth it.
It was, because you're happier.
I am. I love Arthur Brooks.
Kind of like Albert Brooks, in certain ways. Funny.
Dartmouth men's basketball team voted 13-2 in favor of becoming the first ever labor union for college athletics. This could shake up the National Collegiate Athletics Association's model, which only allows them to financially benefit through name, image, and likeness. Joining us right now to talk about the potential ramifications of the unionization is Ben Portnoy. He is Sports Business Journal College sports reporter. Ben, this is kind of amazing because college athletics have changed so much since NIL was allowed in, since the players started making money. What are the potential ramifications of this unionization vote?
Yeah, I think the big thing here is, I mean, first off, look, this is a monumental moment for college athletics, right? Nothing super similar to this has happened, at least as far as actually getting a union vote together and piecing together something this this sort of distinct. Now, there's been similar
2014.
Cases.
Northwestern.
Right. There's Northwestern piece is part of it, but nothing has gotten this public, I should say, at least this far down the line, this official. And I think that the important piece with this, when you look at it, is that Dartmouth, it's a private school. The Ivy League is made up of very similar schools. I think the impact you're going to see with this case specifically is just on the sort of Ivy League, the private schools, at least in the interim. Right. Now, that said, I think this also can be a precursor to a couple of other things that are kind of making their way through the courts, whether that's with the NLRB or elsewhere. That I think will have a little bit larger ramifications as far as for some of these Power Five and high major schools. But I think this is kind of the first step in seeing a more widespread employment in college athletics. And I think it's been trending that way for a long time. But this is sort of the first big, big, big step and sort of first distinct step that we've seen, at least in the last kind of year.
I mean, Ivy Leagues are interesting in particular because they don't even offer scholarships to the students who play on these teams. What would happen if this goes forward? Because the courts have been pretty friendly to the athletes in all of these cases that have made it.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction here, right? You look at Ivy League schools, and I think, frankly, that's the concern for a lot of administrators, at least at the Ivy League level, at the Division II, Division III level, and sort of where you might see a lot of the ramifications of this unionization and this case sort of play out. And I think that the reality is, and Dartmouth argued this yesterday in its appeal that it's filed now, and this will obviously weave its way through the courts, but is that the Dartmouth men's basketball team loses hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And I think that that's not necessarily unique in college athletics, at least at that level. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of schools that say, if our athletes are employees, if, you know, we have to pay college athletes, especially again at the D2, D3 level. There's a lot of schools that frankly can't afford it. And I think that that becomes a bigger issue as far as what does athletics at that level look like. Now, again, we're talking
meaning
about
that they would shut down these programs if they were allowed to unionize.
You know, I think that no one wants to shut down programs, but I think you could see more widespread things like club sports. Do schools end up offering less sports? You know, the D1 minimum right now, I believe, is 14. You know, do Division I schools end up start sponsoring, what is it, 4, 5, 6 sports instead of, you know, 22 or, you know, places like Stanford and that have more than 30? I think it depends. And I think we're still a ways from getting an exact ruling there, getting an exact sort of idea of what that might look like. But again, I think that at the D2, D3 level, it's a huge, huge problem for schools, again, that are sponsoring sports, not necessarily that are not making the money that you talk about when we talk about sort of high major.
I mean, Division I sports have changed so much with the name, image and likeness, where you have some players who can make a couple hundred thousand dollars playing on a team and others who get nothing. It has been a strange and interesting thing to watch. You think that there's going to be more equity that eventually works its way into D1 too?
I think that the market's going to sort itself out on some level, right? I think that this is a new industry, for lack of a better term. And I think that when you look at that and you look at what NIL has been, right, it's sort of been the market figuring itself out. You know, there's been football players at the high major level that are making, you know, multi-million dollar contracts over the course of their 4 years in school. And I think that, you know, if you look at trends in the NFL and things like that, right, look, quarterbacks are going to make more money than the third string offensive linemen. And I think that, you know, whether things are equal across the board, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that you're going to see, again, the market will sort of start to figure itself out. And I think that when you have the combination confluence of the transfer portal, NIL, it's created some of this mess that we see, or at least why college sports have been thrown into a little bit of chaos, at least in recent years.
Ben, thank you. Ben Portnoy.
OpenAI has publicly responded to a lawsuit brought by co-founder Elon Musk. It reproduced some old emails from Musk in which the Tesla CEO encouraged the startup to raise at least $1 billion in funding and agreed that it should start being less open and, in his words, not share the company's science with the public. In one email from 2018, Musk wrote that OpenAI had no chance of becoming a relevant competitor to Google's DeepMind without some meaningful changes. Those emails are at odds with Musk's lawsuit filing last week in which he accused the company and CEO Sam Altman of deviating from its initial mission by keeping inner workings of its AI model a secret for commercial purposes. In response to OpenAI's blog post, Musk posted on X, "Change your name," reflecting his criticism that OpenAI is no longer an open source project for the benefit of humanity, but a for-profit enterprise. We should note that CNBC has not independently verified the authenticity of the emails included in OpenAI's blog post, some of which contained partial redactions. And it sounds like he was fairly definitive about what he was saying, but it was 6 years ago, some of the emails, and I don't think any of us saw what was coming in terms of or how quickly we were going to be here in this place.
OpenAI. His tweet back to them, change your name, or his ex post back to them. Yeah. I mean, that's what he told Andrew too. Basically, they should rename themselves closed source for maximum profit potential.
Told Andrew to change his name to Jonathan?
No. I mean, he said open source.
Closed
AI.
That's the pod for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern to catch the entire 3-hour TV show. You can always follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please rate or review this podcast and spread the word. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.